And we are back once again with yet another exciting episode of Rick's Horror Review Show. That's Rick's Rated R Horror Documentary Review Show today, where we review all things that are related to horror, as usual. Horror TV shows, horror movies, horror TV shows, horror primetime specials from the 1990s featuring Barbara Walters. And I'm here now. And of course, horror gimmicks from wrestling. But we'd also done YouTube shorts, and tonight, another YouTube short, because around here, we absolutely love that shit. But if I am very honest with you, and I am always honest with you, there's a very special type of horror that I tend to gravitate towards. It's got a greater gravitational pull than anything else. It's the Jupiter of our solar system. Horror is the Jupiter of the horror solar system. Horror system. Huh. But I also, as I recently found out, am quite fond of knowing what vampires, well, what they do in the shadows. I also love a good witch's tale, a New England folktale, perhaps. But of course, one mustn't forget a creepy zombie that just wants to eat your brains, because it doesn't know anything. It doesn't want tacos for some reason. Maybe it wants a brain taco. I don't know. But a classic ghost haunting of your home is also quite fascinating. Your home. Not mine. Your home. I love to see that story. Because the ghost can't cross over. And it's just here to fuck with you. If you are new to our show, welcome. If you are a returning listener, welcome back. And before my producers start barking in my ears, I'd like to first and foremost tell you about our socials. You can find the Rick's Horror Show, Rick's Horror, at the TikTok and Instagrams and on the YouTubes, and we're on the Facebooks too, but not really. We have a Facebooks, but nobody ever goes on there except for the old. Well, before I go on to talk about this very special episode, I'd like to formally and first and foremost introduce the co-host of Rick's Horror Review Show, Rick's Rated R Horror Review Show, Billy the AI.
I'm right here. Glad you didn't forget about me. Let's get back to the future, Marty. Something's gotta be done about your kids. The fuck-ups. I'm just kidding, actually. No, they're not fuck-ups.
That's okay. Welcome. Billy, this is a different topic for us this evening. Are you ready?
Well, you know, I don't have any fun film facts for you today because it's, you know, it's one of those real-life horror situations that, you know, I just think it's insensitive to do fun facts. There's nothing fun about real-life horror. And, you know, I think as you get into it and the audience will find out more what you're talking about, these are tough situations that I think sometimes are, you know, I think maybe sold it to the public as supernatural occurrences. But, you know, I happen to think that there's probably a very rational and very human explanation for all of this.
You know what? I don't disagree with you there, buddy. But yeah, tonight in Rick's Horror Review Show, we're talking about the missing 411 cases. Now, if you don't know what the missing 411 case is, they are a set of cases that, missing 411. If you're here in the States, 411 is typically the old phone number that you use to punch up.
Beep, 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 beep. Yes, this is 411. How can I help you?
And they would give you information, sort of like a prehistoric internet. And it was actually a person on the other end of the phone. And, you know, you'd ask them a question, and you know, they probably had, like, vast amounts of dictionaries and encyclopedias, and give you the information that you sought. Now, I never personally dialed 411 to find information. Thank the universe, but, you know, missing 411 means missing information. Okay, we were not going to make a spectacle out of this particular episode, because, again, it deals with sensitive stuff, as Billy just said. And, Billy, do you have anything else to say before we go on?
No, I think, you know, good luck, and I'll be here. I'm right here listening, and, you know, let's get it done.
Okay, let's get her done indeed. We have a show format. You know, it's slightly modified for our real-life horror episodes. This is a special one, as I just said. But we're going to talk about why I chose to review this film or this documentary. And by the way, there are a plethora of documentaries, YouTube shorts, a host of, you know, folks on there at the on the internet, on the, or let's the host likes to say, on the YouTubes, that are making videos on this topic. I found this to be fascinating and interesting. I liked one in particular, although I did see several, and the name of the YouTube's channel is called Roanoke Tales. Did I say it's called Roanoke Tales? Yeah, I think it did say it's called Roanoke Tales. I meant to say it's called Roanoke Tales, but as I mentioned just now, there's all kinds of YouTube channels out there, and I'll link this particular one. I liked his style, this Roanoke Tales gentleman. He didn't sensationalize the events or portray them as being anything more than potentially just a sad human occurrence, sad human events that tend to happen, and I appreciate that, because sometimes I think it goes supernatural immediately. And if you've heard our review on Phenomena, if you haven't heard our review on Phenomena, shame on you! Father Pilon, this gentleman who put together the Hepta group, was really interested and fascinated by the supernatural, but he put together a group of Xers to find rational answers to the irrational, to use natural solutions before looking at supernatural potential solutions, right? So this is the approach that this guy takes. You know, he takes a very pragmatic approach to what could potentially be happening in these missing 411 cases, and I really appreciate that. And but again, this may not be your style. Maybe you want this to be sensational. Oh, it's the missing 411. And then the child was taken by an invisible demon. I don't mean to make light of these situations, but, you know, I unfortunately, there are instances where, you know, I feel they look towards supernatural explanations before they look at natural explanations. And again, missing 411 means that there might be some information that is interesting or missing, or it's not all available, and the circumstances of these disappearances are, you know, questionable, but still within the realm of, I think, human possibility, in my opinion. But let's move on here. And so why this topic? Well, as I mentioned earlier, or actually I mentioned yesterday in yesterday's episode, if you have not heard our review on Out of Darkness, I gave that movie I'll wait for you to find out and go listen to it. I am going to be down in Mexico later this week, and this is one of the topics that we're going to be discussing, the missing 411 cases, and I thought, hell, why not be prepared to discuss this on somebody else's show and maybe give a little bit of a companion warm-up episode for folks who might be listening to all three of you who listen to me here. So this is one of the topics that we'll be discussing, and, you know, it's quite interesting, and it's real-life horror stuff. And this real-life, I've been on the real-life horror binge lately, so why not? Okay, I just mentioned this is real-life horror, so that's why. Why this topic, and why, what kind of horror this is? Okay, so context. We're going to get into a lot of different context here. And I am going to, first and foremost, again, I just described to you what the missing 411 stuff is, but let me give you a little more detailed context as to, you know, the missing 411 cases. Now, they are a series
They are a series of books and a term coined by a gentleman by the name of David Pollitz to describe a phenomenon involving the mysterious disappearances of people in national parks and wilderness areas under, questionable circumstances. And the term 411 suggests there are numerous unsolved cases of missing persons for which there are very few, if any, straightforward explanations often. These cases are often involve sudden disappearances with search and rescue efforts failing to provide answers or clues to the individual's whereabouts. I mentioned earlier, the 411 name implies a connection to information or an emergency, echoing the American number for information and assistance, though here it signifies the mystery and lack of information surrounding the disappearances, thus missing 411 or missing information. Now, who is David Pollitz and why does this have this authority to create this thing? Well, because this is America. And this guy put together a bunch of information together, and he happens to be a former police detective who became an investigator and author focusing on these unexplained missing persons cases. Now, he has, in fact, compiled the research into several books under the Missing 411 label, highlighting patterns he believes to be significant in the disappearances, such as the absence of scent trails, scent dogs, obviously, the sudden cessation of tracks, the individual's proximity to bodies of water, unusual weather conditions coinciding with the disappearance, and often found state of missing clothes or belongings. Now, Pollitz's work extends to giving talks, participating in interviews, and producing documentary films to raise awareness of these questionable cases. I am not going to call them mysterious, but certainly questionable cases. His approach is notable for not speculating. Good. Openly about the cause of these disappearances, though he does emphasize the peculiarities and the patterns that challenge conventional explanation, circumstantial.
Of course he has critics, and they argue that he may draw connections between unrelated cases and, or suggest that a mystery exists where they may not necessarily be one, and I think I am somewhere in that In that group of people. I like to explore as many rational avenues as I can before I consider something supernatural or, impossible to explain under the known laws of physics. Let us not forget the natural law of the universe and the laws of physics and all of those laws that govern the natural world.
Okay. Now, however, his work has, in fact, obviously garnered a significant following among those interested in unsolved mysteries, national park safety, and the potential for for unknown factors contributing to these disappearances. Okay, so that's who he is. I have researched four of these cases in particular, but literally this is an open book situation. People go missing in parks, national parks, all the time. Why? I mean, they're vast wilderness. If you've never been to Yosemite National Forest, if you're in California like I am, if you're in the States and if you've ever visited a national forest or a trail, if you go off the path, you're going to get lost fairly quickly. If you're alone and you're not an experienced, navigator, and if you're not a person an experienced outdoors person, you're risking yourself. There tends to be almost no cellular signal out there, no mobile phone. Most people, I reckon to say, have no idea how a compass works. Definitely nobody has a satellite phone. I'm not nobody, but very unusual for anybody to have this kind of technology that would facilitate an exit from, a particular situation. Say they were stuck in a pickle in the middle of the forest. Now, you can get very disoriented very quickly. I have been to Yosemite National Park. I have been to many a trail here. Hell, there's mountains right down the street from where I live.
If you are not an experienced person, if you are not in the right state of mind, let's say you've been boozing it up a little bit, hitting the booze, or you've been taking a few too many gummies, you might just get a little lost. And again, without anybody knowing where you were going, without anybody being able to contact you while you're there, you're facing a difficult, challenging situation. Okay, and that's as an adult. All right, that's number one. Imagine if you're a child. You somehow wandered into, you know, because your family's on a vacation, as folks tend to do in the States. You tend to go to national parks during the summer, take a family vacation and do all that good stuff, or just go on a trail for, you know, a nice walk on a weekend, you know, a nice sunny day here in California. You hit the trails and suddenly you don't know where your kid is. Okay, so these situations are not strange at all to me. Okay, and as I just mentioned, they happened. God, can't speak English. Think I knew him. Speak English today. They happen, unfortunately, rather often. Thankfully, most of these people are, you know, found. Why? Because of the advent of modern technology, you can't really go missing as easily as you could. You know, you can contact research teams much quicker than you could in the olden days. Obviously, it's a different world, and even then, it still happens now. Okay, so that's my initial take on it. But I want to talk first and foremost about the first case here. And the first one here, his name is Keith Parkins. Now, I'm going to share, I got some audience feedback, and they don't say that they like the visual. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to give the audience what they want. We're going to give them a... Oh, Lord! Help my days! The first of these four cases that I want to talk about is this little fellow here. His name is Keith Parkins, and this happened in 1962. Before I inject my unwanted opinion on this, let's learn a little bit about who Keith Parkins is, by the way, because this one has a happy ending, thankfully. He's one of the mysterious cases and disappearances that is featured in David Polly's Missing 411 project. And, you know, specific details about, as I just mentioned, each case vary widely. But this one is interesting to me because it didn't happen in a national park. Okay, so he was a 2-year-old child at the time of his disappearance, 1962. Okay, so that's how old he was. Now, I just described to you situations that could happen to an adult, as an adult. Imagine you're a 2-year-old, okay? So the disappearance typically occur in national parks, as I just mentioned, but for him, it didn't occur in a national park. As a matter of fact, it happened sort of in a wooded, remote area. And the information is sketchy. Again, 1962, the collection of information like this wasn't happening probably as well as it is today. This one, you know, there was extensive search efforts once they found out that he was missing, right? He was found alive, okay? And you can look at this documentary. This gentleman does a tremendous job. I just want to skim through some of these details that I think are important here. He was found 8 miles away from where he was last seen. And, you know, being 2 years old, the distance, the documentary talks about the distance that he traveled, those 8 miles in, and, you know, the weather condition, adverse weather conditions as well. The only thing that I will say is that this child was left to roam on his own. As we covered in another episode, in terms of, you know, missing children or, you know, abducted in plain sight, if you haven't heard of a review on abducted in plain sight, go check that one out. That one's really interesting. But they assume that this 2-year-old walked 8 miles on his own, under his own volition. But have, and I'm certain that the possibility is considered, but he includes this case in his missing 411 cases because, again, the biggest and most important thing is that this kid traversed 8 miles in a short amount of time that is, you know, somewhat possible for an adult, but definitely almost impossible for a child. But I just want to consider the possibility of potentially this kid being taken.
because, you know, there's a lack of, how do I say this? There's a lack of evidence that suggests that he actually walked anywhere, right? There wasn't a trail they could follow. Again, missing 401. There also wasn't, like, the hounds that searched for these people. They couldn't find the scent trail for him. The interesting to me here is he could have, I think, maybe been taken. I don't know. Taken by an adult. Not taken by a UFO or some shit like that. Okay? This is 1962. We just did, again, abducted in plain sight, and this was, 72? This is 10 years before that. And we know what happened with that guy. 10 years after the disappearance of this guy in 72, not to get too much into this one, this gentleman who committed this act of abduction, kidnapping, took somebody to Mexico, literally got a slap on the hand. Okay? Now imagine 10 years before that. I have an inkling, a belief, that this child, and I will place a... Look at this little kid. I have an inkling and a belief that somebody took this kid. He, in fact, did not walk 8 miles. Somebody saw him in an open field while his family wasn't paying attention. I think his two brothers may have been in charge of him while his mother was inside cooking. And while these teenagers... You ever met a teenager? You ever met another child? You ever met a child taking care of another child? Of course, there's circumstances and situations where, you know, they do a tremendous job. But there's also circumstances and situations where they don't do a tremendous job, where you definitely cannot leave a child in front of in charge of another child. I think that in this case, he was taken by somebody when the children were not looking. The other two kids were playing. This little guy was outside wandering on his own in the vast fields that, you know, in the fields where he was found. He was taken. And, you know, fortunately, I think maybe the person who took him had remorse. And of course, I'm also speculating. This is all missing information, right? But I like to place a logical approach to this. This is 62. We know of people getting taken all the time. Senior kills are rampant. You know, they exist. They existed a lot during the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Hey, 90s? Hell, who knows now? It was a lot easier to get away with this kind of stuff. Information wasn't readily available. You can just phone somebody, like, or look up the internet, or the kid had a little tracker. He was taken. Perhaps this person had remorse. And they left him in some unspecified location where he hoped that the kid would be found. That's, I think, what happened with this kid. Thankfully, as I mentioned earlier, Keith Perkins is alive. And he'd be like a, you know, 63, 64-year-old gentleman. Okay, so the thing is that in these cases, they don't suspect foul play. They're saying that a hallmark of missing 411 cases is the absence of evidence suggesting animal attacks, abductions, or other clear causes of disappearances. But again, 1962, police work, how much has it evolved since then? The ability to collect evidence, the ability to have an objective eye to look at these circumstances. And did this happen often enough in 1962? Did people care enough in 1962 to dig a little deeper? I don't know. I just feel like this one, you know, I have to attribute it to, you know, an abduction, to be honest with you. There are speculations and theories that he perhaps, you know, got lost or injured. And the ones I don't like is where they start to get into paranormal activity or other mysterious phenomena. Because how do you explain such a thing? How do you explain how do you get into irrational immediately? In 62, the most rational conclusion that I can come up with is that he was abducted. And again, it wasn't expected. It caught everybody by surprise. Nobody was expecting that they needed to find footprints of this child. Nobody really knew where to look.
And this is too speculative, and I personally cannot say that this was supernatural. There's nothing out of the ordinary for me in terms of missing information. To me, this is clearly an abduction. Of course, and I am not a professional at any of this stuff. But when I read about him and I saw this, my brain, and I think I happen to have a rather logical brain. My gut, Mrs. Fuck, is that this little kid was taken. And as I just mentioned, fortunately, whoever took him, maybe it was another child that took him. Maybe it was some other teenager or something else. And, you know, they wandered off, and thankfully he was found. Okay. Now, they don't really have locations of where he was found, but yeah. Okay, moving on. This other little fella, his name is Sammy Bull. Disappeared on October 14th, 2006. Now we're pushing, now we're really into the future here, okay? So this is several years out of 1962. So he wasn't missing at Crater Lake National Forest in Oregon, okay? Now, I'm going to show you exactly what Crater Lake in Oregon look like if you're not familiar with it, if you're listening to us from outside of the U.S. It's Crater Lake right here. It's literally a crater. And it has a lake. And this location is vast. And again, for a child, an accompanied child, or a child that may just have a wandering spirit, or you have parents that may happen that maybe are, you know, enjoying their vacation and they may be boozing it up a little bit too much. And for a child, a place like this is very, very dangerous. That is if your parents, I don't say this, you know, in a mocking way, but that is if you have loving parents who take care of you, even they may get distracted. Let's suppose that you are not exactly the most loved of children. And, you know, this to me looked like a great location for perhaps making it seem as if, you know, you may have gotten lost or taken or, you know, whatever the case may be. Okay, so that's Crater Lake during the winter time. And yeah, it's a beautiful location, but also, again, for a child, rather, rather dangerous, okay? Especially for a young, adventurous child who wants to explore the natural beauty that is Crater Lake. Could you imagine finding yourself here, never seen this before, under the best of circumstances, right? We can assume that, what's logical? He got lost, he fell, something, right? What's also logical? His parents went to leave him there. They couldn't handle him. You know, they had emotional trauma, emotional stress, and they committed one of the most heinous acts a human being can do, but leave their child here, or even worse. Some criminal act was committed, the child was murdered, stuff like that. Okay, those are, like, I think, the things that come to mind first and foremost. But, you know, a little bit of background here on Sammy here. So he disappeared when he was 8 years old. As I mentioned before, October 14, 2016, I just showed you Cleetwood Cove area at Crater Lake National Park. Sammy was visiting Crater Lake National Park with his father, Kenneth Bull. At around 4 p.m., Sammy ran up a cinder slope into the woods and vanished from sight. Okay, now, this is, again, circumstantial stuff. This is information that the father obviously had given the police. I would hope that this is all the truth, but I don't know. I was not there. So at around 4 p.m., he runs up that cinder slope and he now vanishes from his father's sight. Now, despite his father's immediate effort, according to him, to find him and subsequent extensive search operation, no trace of Sammy was ever found. Before I go on, I just want to say this. Who are the witnesses that say that Sammy was actually here at this location with his father? Not placing the blame on anybody, just investigating or thinking logically. Did they actually go there together? I don't know.
So search efforts and search and rescue efforts. So an extensive search was conducted involving multiple agencies and resources, including search and rescue teams. Something, by the way, that Keith Parkins somewhat benefited from. But again, you know, some 30-something years later, 40-something years later, yeah, the techniques used for the search of this child much more advanced than they were for Sammy Perkins. I'm sorry, for Keith Perkins. So again, an extensive search was conducted involving multiple agencies and resources, including search and rescue teams, volunteers, and possibly the use of dogs and aerial searches. And they say possibly the rugged and vast terrain of Crater Lake National Park combined with the weather conditions made the search efforts challenging. Despite these efforts, no sign of Sammy was found, and the case, unfortunately, remains unsolved. I think about many things when I think about this case. The most logical one is, again, to me personally, that's my logic. Did he ever go? Was he actually there? Is there evidence of him being seen with his father? If you have a hound who is supposed to pick up a scent trail and the scent trail is not being picked up by the hound, I'm no specialist in search and rescue teams, but that to me seems a little mysterious, and it's only something I'm sure the police explored. But even then, if nothing has was, I just, the most logical one to me for this one is that the kid was never actually here. He found no remains. Sure, the weather made it difficult to find, but. So impacting legacy, his disappearance left a lasting impact on his family and the community. He'd also become a part of a broader narrative and mysterious disappearances in national parks and wilderness areas as documented by David Pauly. Now, this case was referenced in various medias, including documentaries and discussions about the missing 411 series, highlighting the perplexing nature of such disappearances and the challenges in search and rescue operations in wilderness areas. I'll inject my own opinion here again. You are in a national park in 2006, although much more advanced than we were in 1962. But still, I think, just to put things in perspective, the iPhone wasn't a thing. Cell phone trackers were not a thing. Smartphones were in its infancy, if it did. The level of advancement in terms of human communications was not what it is in the year 2024. It certainly was much better than in 1962, but you're out in a location that is secluded. You're out in a location where somebody can easily say that you were with them when you were actually never with them. They never came with you. You can certainly say that they were lost or that they ran 50 feet in front of you and you don't know where they went. Okay, no remains were ever found of this child, and unfortunately, I think in this situation that he never went with that. My personal opinion, of course. I don't know. I'm not a personal investigator, but I'll throw that one out there. Not placing the blame on anybody here. Okay, the next one here, very very interesting. Dior Kunz Jr., known as Little Dior. Now, he vanished on July 10th, 2015. And look at this little guy. Can you imagine? And these are the parents. Parents right here. Parents, a missing toddler. And here's a little guy. And then this is where he allegedly went missing. He was 2 years old at the time of his disappearance. As I just mentioned with Keith Parkins, a two-year-old in a place like this, I mean, that kid better be on a leash. Again, if your parents are out there relaxing and trying to have a good time, as, you know, young parents tend to do, you know, a lot of shit can go wrong. And, you know, for being 2 years old, it's very easy to just go wandering and you're obviously incapable of taking care of yourself. That's why you need your parents to be in the best state of mind. If you take your children here, please be in the best state of mind that you could possibly be in. The vast forgiveness
unforgiving outdoors that are our national parks. Disappeared on July 10th, 2015. Now, this one is interesting because that is now modern times. The iPhone's around. Tracking systems are much more advanced. This is now 9 years after the disappearance of Sammy Boke. So this one is a little more interesting because of that, right? Okay, so again, as I just mentioned, he disappeared in Timber Creek Campground near Leodore, Idaho. Not far from here. No, quite far from here. The circumstances of this child's disappearance. Again, he was camping. Camping picture with his parents, Theodore Kunz Jr., Jessica Mitchell, as well as his great-grandfather, Robert Walton, and a friend of the great-grandfather, Isaac Reinwand. According to reports, Dior's parents thought he was with his great-grandfather at the creek, and the great-grandfather believed the boy was with the parents. When everybody realized that Dior was missing, they started searching for him frantically and quickly notified authorities, allegedly. Search and investigation, an extensive search was launched involving local law enforcement, search and rescue teams, volunteers, dogs, and area resources. Despite thorough searches of the area, no trace of Dior was ever found, unfortunately. Put a picture up of him again. The case attracted significant media attention when investigated by multiple private investigators over the years, and various theories have been proposed regarding what happened to little Dior, unfortunately, ranging from an animal attack, a child. Can you imagine a two-year-old as an adult male, you know, with relatively hefty weight and height, fending off a natural predator out in the outdoors is a scary sight to me. I can't imagine being 2 years old and being faced with that possibility. Of course, abduction was also something that they floated as a possibility. The possibility of wandering and succumbing to the elements also could be something that happened to him. Over time, law enforcement officials have expressed suspicions about the accounts provided by the family members and acquaintances present during the trip, leading to further investigation. However, no conclusive evidence has been presented publicly that definitively explained what happened to Dior. Now, his disappearance has had profound impact on his family and the community. I sure hope so. And it has sparked widespread interest and sympathy across the nation, with many people following the case and hoping for resolution. The case, unfortunately, remains open and considered a mystery. Dior's parents have faced scrutiny and have been named the suspects by some investigators, but they have consistently denied any involvement in the son's disappearance and maintained that he was abducted. Now, that's an interesting thing, that the parents maintain that he was abducted. Why? Why would that be the first thing that it comes to mind? I don't know. You know, if I had, you know, if I had my little two-year-old out there, and you know, I would think the first thing that came to mind is, unfortunately, you know, I took my eye off him. I was irresponsible when I should have been more careful and responsible with my child, and unfortunately, he may have been taken by a predator. An animal predator, I would think, first and foremost, being out there somewhere. But I also think that's a very easy and convenient thing to say. But it's just really interesting to say that they maintain that their child was taken, or rather abducted, by a human predator. I don't know. Again, no real supernatural circumstance here. Again, the fact that they go missing in a national park, to me, is not suspicious. I mean, it's convenient. I don't suspect you know, some mysterious door opening from the ground. Although, you know, we could talk about all this alien talk in another episode, and the possibility of interdimensional beings actually being a possibility. I just don't see why they would have interest in a little boy like this, who had his entire life ahead of him, and it's tragic. Speculating, of course, that those creatures are actually a thing, but moving on. Okay, Jared Atadero. Another really, really young boy here. And here he is here. Little boy on the left here. Oh, my goodness. Three-year-old boy who went missing on October 2nd, 1999 while on a hike with a group along the Big South Trail located in the Arapaho and Roosevelt National Forest in Colorado. So I will show you what that looks like. Again, 3 years old. I'm sorry, but if I had a three-year-old, I would never let him go anywhere. That kid would be on a leash. You know, the fact that this kid was out here without a parent, like, I mean, I know they were adults there and he was with, you know, a Christian group. That doesn't say much to me, considering we've already reviewed, again, Abducted in Plain Sight and how those people from those groups, are being part of a Christian group doesn't mean you're a saint. I'm sorry. Okay, that means nothing to me. You're still an adult. You still could potentially have nefarious reasons, but let's move on. So there he is again, and he was, again, 3 years old, and he was part of a group hike that included his father. Oh, his father included, I'm sorry. Included his father, Alan Atadero, members of a Christian singles group, and other children. At some point during the hike, Jared ran ahead of the group and then was not seen again. After Jared's disappearance, a large-scale search and rescue was launched, but despite extensive efforts involving search and rescue teams, dogs, and volunteers, Jared was not immediately found after his disappearance. The terrain where Jared disappeared is rugged and remote, you can imagine, as I just showed you, making the search efforts by these teams a complicated endeavor, certainly. They actually discovered his remains. And they were discovered on May 6, 2003, and they were approximately 500 feet above the trail where Jared was last seen. In 2003, hikers discovered clothing and remains that were later confirmed to be those of Jared Atadero. The location and condition of the remains raised many questions about how Jared ended up so far from the trail in an area difficult to access, especially for a small child. There is, of course, impact and speculation about his disappearance and the subsequent discovery of his remains, which have, in fact, led to much speculation about investigation and speculation, including theories related to animal attacks, abductions, and even more mysterious or unexplained causes. The case remains a point of focus within the Missing 411 series, illustrating the perplexing nature of some of the disappearances in rural and wilderness areas. Of course, profound impact on his family, and it's become a significant part of the conversation around safety in national parks and wilderness areas. It also highlights the challenges faced by search and rescue operations in rugged terrain. This mystery, of course, surrounded Jared's experience and the tragic outcome continue to intrigue and sadden anybody who learns about the case, as is the case with us tonight. But I liked how, and that's as much information I'll give you, Niles. That's him, and we'll keep it here. But opinions now, right? All speculative. I'm no investigator, but again, just somebody who I consider myself to be of logical, sound mind, and capable of rather logical thought. I just, you know, they say he's with a Christian singles group. And just looking at this stuff, right? I'm no private investigator, but I'm looking at this, and the first thing I would say is, well, I don't know. Even the tattering of his clothes seems so profoundly human, if I may say. It's as if somebody thought to themselves, oh, okay, this is what it would look like if they were attacked. But the thoughts came to somebody who is not an expert in animal attacks of the particular type of animal that could have potentially, if that is the case that happened, if that was actually what happened, they were not capable of thinking about the methods by which a potential animal attack would have occurred on him, and maybe did a little Google search and cut up some stuff that looked like this. You know, this almost looks like a shark bite over here. It's like perfectly cut out bite of a bite of, you know, of enormous proportions for cloth to tear that way. You know, you'd really have to go and investigate the type of animal that could make incisions like this. And then the entire missing leg, the right leg on those pants, just seems so neatly done, as if it was done by scissors to me personally. And again, I'm no expert. This is all speculation. All of this stuff is speculation. And hell, I'm joining the speculation club here. Again, what is the, you know, I hate to say this and think, I hate to think about this, but no blood anywhere? If this was in fact the clothes that this poor child was wearing when he was, you know, attacked by, you know, by an animal, where's his blood? And, you know, as the Roanoke Gentleman channel also mentioned, he did a little more investigating too. If it was a, you know, the part of the mystery here is that if it was a mountain lion or one of these creatures that inhabits this particular region, they're known for going after the internals. And yet somehow, again, his stomach region intact. Look at that sweater. Nothing there. Just as if, you know, the person again, like, you know, again, in my speculation, as if the person who cut up these tattered clothes in an effort to make it seem as if he was attacked completely neglected the fact that they could have gone for the torso and instead somehow went for the leg. An arm could have been a possibility too. It's just so neatly done. And now the shoes as well, right? They find these shoes and somehow, I don't know, these shoes just seem new to me, you know? And again, I just speculate on normal human predators or normal animal predators. I think to me, this is, I sad to say this, but I don't think this kid was taken by an animal predator. I think this happened to him by a human. You know, they were in the Christian singles group. And as we already know from Abducted in Plain Sight, you know, just because you're part of a Christian group doesn't necessarily mean you're the greatest of human beings. This happened in 1999. Again, technology isn't what it is today. Out in the middle of a wilderness forest where you know there's less eyes on you watching, the things that you are willing to do to something or someone, unthinkable. But I always go for a rational explanation. And in this case, I am also going to think that this was done by a human being. I don't see the reason for why this is a supernatural occurrence. And that's the last one here. But this is the missing 411 cases is this is real life horror stuff. You know, this is really that really sad events, and there's more than just these four cases. Let me tell you, they are cases all the time. Do a search on missing 411 information, and you'll find them. They are absolutely everywhere. They happen in every, let's say, in every location in the United States. And if there's large forest or, you know, forested areas in your country, you know, I'd love to know if this kind of thing is a common occurrence where you live in your part of the world, because it's fascinating to me to think that, well, you know, that they're considered, you know, sometimes supernatural occurrences. I just don't see it, you know. But I think that's going to be it for this this episode of Rick's Horror Review Show. Rick's, unfortunately, real life horror review show tonight. And follow us on the old TikTok, the Instagrams, and the YouTubes. And if you have any information about any of these cases or any, you know, that you might like be willing to share, or if you have information about your own case that you find interesting, I'd love to hear about it. This stuff is interesting, and I will always definitely look at this from a logical perspective, unless you present to me something that is just definitely so far beyond the known laws of the natural world, the four fundamental laws, you know, all the laws of physics that we all must follow and adhere to as far as we're concerned, unless a new law has been invented, or I'm sorry, a new law has been discovered. I will always look at that stuff from that eye and that perspective, and it's difficult to look at it from any other. Again, I'd love to hear about anything. So I appreciate you being here tonight, and we'll see you again and on another exciting episode of Rick's Horror Review Show, Rick's real life horror review show in this case. Have a good night.